House Special Committee on Energy to order. It is 3:07. Members present are Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Peterson, Representative Tuck, Co-Chair Edgman, and myself, Representative Millet. As always, we will ask the folks in the audience to silence your cell phones. The business that will take place today in House Energy, we will hear a short overview of the proposed CS for the GRETC legislation. We have Jim Strandberg here and some folks from AA that will walk us through the changes to the CS and walk us through the bill completely. I will say at 3:30 we will take a brief recess. Members of this committee are interested in going up to Senate resources to hear some testimony given by Senator Stevens and former Governor Frank Murkowski at 3:30, and we will come back and come back into session after that. As soon as that testimony is done, we'll come back and reconvene the meeting and continue with our discussion on this CS. And at this time, I will make a motion to adopt the work draft CS for House Bill Number 182, Work Draft 26-GH1041/E.
Madam Chair, I'm going to object for the purposes of discussion.
And Representative Ramirez has objected for discussion purposes at that time. Mr. Strandberg, if you'd like to come up and give us your wonderful presentation. Thanks for being here. It's good to see you again in front of the committee.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Can everybody hear me? Okay. Good afternoon. Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Strandberg. I am a project manager with the Alaska Energy Authority, and I have with me today Department of Law Senior Assistant Attorney General Mr. Brian Bjorquist. I would propose that I give the overview of what the bill is, and Mr. Bjorquist is available to give you a high-level section-by-section analysis of the bill. I'd expect that I would take probably about 20 minutes, and I'd certainly welcome any questions at any time in the presentation. My goal here is to give you the overview and the metaphor, here's a rifle and let me show you how to shoot it, you know, this sort of high-level presentation. I have 11 PowerPoint slides that summarize the work the administration, in collaboration with the Rail Belt Utilities and the Energy Authority, has done with the Rail Belt G&T restructuring effort. I would propose to go through those and in process to give first a short discussion of what the new corporation GRETC is about, and its business purpose, its powers, external controls on its operations in the future, and finally a discussion of the initial tasks that we see the company may take on once it's formed. Now, I would comment that we just received the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 182, which was spoke to in your motion, and also the cover memo from Ledge Legal, and we have done very preliminary examinations of those, and we continue to work on those.
Mr. Strandberg, if I could just interrupt you. Let the record reflect that Representative Johansson has joined us. And for those members listening online, you can find the legal services opinion that that the Ledge drafters for the legislature made comments on the proposed CS from the administration. And it's quite lengthy. It's 3 pages. And it does come up with some issues that I think we'll be hoping we get some answers from the administration on, especially I will point out the constitutional issue that they bring up on page 2.
Okay. Yes, Madam Co-Chair. To get into my presentation, this slide is my only schematic or flow chart in the entire set, and since last time I think that we spoke to you, we've greatly simplified it. I won't go in detail to describe everything, but I do want to give you some comments, and I'll start. As you know, we appeared before you last year with a very different GRETC bill, At the end of that session, the bill was held in your committee, the request of the Rail Belt Utilities. These utilities sought to take a year and involve all of the boards of directors of the Rail Belt Utilities in a task force to work on this first product and to make it more responsive to the needs of the Rail Belt Utilities. I'm happy to report that over the last year, these utilities did in fact form a task force of board members from all six Rail Belt Utilities and have developed a proposed committee substitute, which is before you and the subject of your motion, that has the major support of the six Rail Belt Utilities. AEA and the Governor's Office participated in the majority of these task force meetings, and AEA acted as an advisor and an observer as the work on the bill progressed throughout the summer. The Attorney General provided an assistant Attorney General to work with the group in actually drafting the first draft of the committee substitute, and that attorney was and is Mr. Bjorkqvist, who is with us today. So both of us have a fair amount of history, I guess, and we've been with the process right from its very beginning. The work by AEA, notably the Rail Belt Electrical Grid Authority, or REGA study, which you can see on the slide, was to understand the economics of regional G&T, or generation and transmission. And that study basically found that by forming a unifying organization such as GRETC, that ratepayers could save significant money over the long run. AEA also completed in this last year the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan, the RIRP, to identify future generation and transmission projects and produced the report late this fall. And it did several things that added to the urgency for forming GRETC. First, it defined critical near-term projects that the Rail Belt Utilities really should take on, from critical fuel supply projects to near-term transmission line projects to needed generation additions. The RIRP noted the need for a unifying entity such as GRETC to allow the necessary joint action by the Rail Belt Utilities to accomplish these critical projects. So I think the takeaway from this is that we have some good information in the form of these two documents that are relevant to the actual formation of a company. The REGA study really made the business case for GRETC, and it looked at a number of different ranges of joint action, from loose voluntary organizations to tightly integrated organizations. And the RIRP identified the ordered list of economic projects. This plan, the RIRP, also identified a capital shortfall that is facing the region, where the cumulative capital needs for the projects that the Rail Belt Utilities would need to undertake were much larger than the basic ability of the utilities to raise money. This chart shows over time the emergence of this capital shortfall. The bottom two lines show the ability of the utilities to raise money, and the blue line shows the actual capital that's going to be required. And I guess what has been brought into focus is the fact that GRETC not only would have the ability to save money through unified operation, but it's also being created as a strong financial vehicle and is really a way to address this capital shortfall. Those are, I think, really two key points that really answer the question about why are we here? Why is the state involved in this? So the result is there is a potential gap of up to $5 billion, depending on which projects that actually the region decides to build. And the important point, I'll repeat it again, is the results of the IRP really concluded that a Gretzky or Gretzky-like unifying organization with state financial backing is the best approach to really address this capital shortfall.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask you a question on that point?
Sure.
Under the current statutes, some of the members of this committee and I have been looking at the Joint Action Authority, and it seems to me that the Gretzky and the Joint Action Authority are basically one in the same mechanisms, and there was a group formed under the Joint Action Authority, and I think it was the AREA group that was Golden Valley, MLMP, and Chugach that is still actually on the books to this day. Why do we need Gretzky if we have this other mechanism of the Joint Action Authority already in statute and already the utilities already capable of forming this type of union without putting it in statute under a new piece of legislation?
I would answer your question, Madam Co-Chair, by saying that the Joint Action Agency is really a project-by-project organization. The Gretzky company has significant additional powers, and it really is configured as a conduit where state funds for the rail belt would flow into the company. The JAA, I think, would be a totally voluntary organization, which two utilities, for example, could join together to build a project and under an assumption that they may remain interconnected, but they were not actually participating in any joint planning over the long run. And so I think the Gretzky is a better framework to actually implement a process, an evolutionary process, to unify the entire rail belt.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
What's the legal term, Joint Action Agency? Where would I find it in the statute? I know it was a bill passed in the late 90s, but what, do you have a statutory reference for me?
We can take that question, and I'll get the answer for you, Representative.
I'd like it now so I can look at it while the committee meeting is going on. Does anybody in the room know what the...
It's
42, 45, 300, 310, and 320.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative.
Thank you, Jim.
So, with that background, I'd like to begin to discuss the new legislation and how it is, in fact, different from the legislation that was before you last year. The four topics that I'd like to go over would be governance, powers of the corporation, the external controls for corporate activities, and the initial test for Gretzky. Start with the governance and the Gretzky Board of Directors. These are the key points about the makeup of the governance process within the corporation. Notable for you is the fact that the corporation is a private, not-for-profit entity and is not a state corporation. Also important is that each of the six rail belt utilities, regardless of their size, generating capacity, or transmission line ownership, will have two board members and two votes. And this is different from some of the other organizations in the rail belt where there is different voting powers based on the amount of power being generated. And I think it's a key and critical point where the smaller utilities having a relatively strong voting capability, there is the ability for them to participate in the rail belt development more so than if they had a graded voting capability. Now, as far as membership in Gretzky, Gretzky has public utility members and just plain old standard members. The corporation has six public, has can have up to 6 public utility members and 12 board members. There is one public member of the board who would be appointed by the governor from a list of 3 candidates provided by the public utility members. Public utility members do not have terms of service, but the public member has a 4-year term. Now, the definition of public utility members, and I wanted to see if I can make sure that I don't confuse you on this, or is that the rail belt utilities that basically have distribution service areas that have retail relationships with their customers, those are what we term the public utility members. Other entities that may want to purchase services from the corporation who do not have service areas under RCA jurisdiction would be allowed to go to the meetings, but they would not actually have a vote. The only voting members are the public utility members that have retail customers.
Mr. Strandberg, I have a question on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a utility that operates on the base. It's a for-profit utility. Are they allowed to be part of GRETC? Would they be able to come in? They have their own utility. I think it's owned by Doyon. They have services that they provide to the base. And so my question to you would be, are they available to join into GRETC, or is this only for non-profit and public utilities and not-for-profit and private utilities?
Madam Co-Chair, they could be a member.
They could be a member?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you. And can they be a voting member?
Through the chair, no, they would not have a vote. Okay. So, I'll move to the next one. What types of business can GRETC undertake? Well, clearly, the primary purpose is providing wholesale power to its rail belt customers. And that's at the center of the purpose. And in order to achieve that purpose, there's a considerable number of tasks that GRETC can undertake to generate and sell its wholesale power. Some of those tasks that it can undertake are like procuring fuel supply. There is a capability that GRETC can develop operating standards for the service area of the corporation, and it can develop generation and transmission projects. There is quite a list of capabilities and powers that are built in to the legislation. All of those are designed to allow the corporation to achieve its goal of providing wholesale power at least long-run cost, at adequate reliability for all utilities, distribution utilities within the rail belt.
Jim, I'm going to stop you right here because this is where I have most of my questions. I'm going to go ahead and recess to the call to chair and ask the members return back by 4 o'clock. I think that will be ample time for us to make it to the Senate Resource Committee. And then we'll be back here at 4 unless the testimony and that committee goes a little longer.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience with us.
We'll be
and
back
we are
at 4.
Recessed to the call to chair. Back to order. Sorry, I should have told you guys. Mr. Strandberg, if you wanted to continue your presentation, I apologize. And thank you so much for the latitude to let us go and listen to that testimony.
It's our pleasure, Madam Co-Chair. Oh,
thank you.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I guess I call you. Is that correct, protocol?
Yeah, it's not Mrs.
Perfect.
No.
Okay.
May I continue?
Yes, please.
So I better find my testimony, huh?
Okay. You know this inside and out.
Yeah. What types of business activities can GRETC undertake? Clearly, providing wholesale power is the primary business purpose. But in order to do that, it needs to have a number of powers. and capabilities. And there is a relatively long list within the statute of what, of the things that this company can do. I'll point out three of them. Procuring fuel supplies, that could be something on the order of going out and securing either a coal contract or a gas contract to supply the fuels for the Gretzky generators. Another important power would be the development of operating standards for the service territory of the corporation. And, you know, under the RCA, we do have service areas for each of the regulated utilities. Well, the service territory of the corporation is designed as the aggregate of the service areas, the RCA service areas, of the public utility members that elect to join. And we regard this as a relatively important power, and it very much distinguishes Gretzky from a JAA in that this company is charged with, or it has the power, and it has the elective power, because throughout the statute we use the word may rather than shall this year. And that's one of the major differences between this year and last year. But these operating standards presently reside within the Alaska Intertie Agreement. And they basically have to do with spinning reserve, and they have to do with basic rules of the road for everybody that's interconnected to maintain the reliability of power service.
Mr. Strandberg, can I ask you a question? One of the things I noticed under fuel supplies that you're talking about, it says it on, I'm on page 15, line 7, section B, the corporation is authorized to bid on interest in state land, including bids for oil and gas leases, and may not be required to post a deposit under 3805860. Can you tell me the purpose of why we would want a corporation that's not an oil and gas company to bid on state lands, including bids for oil and gas leases? Would they sublease those lands out to buy the resource?
That's a very insightful question, Madam Co-Chair. And I think it's a matter that the administration is indeed concerned with. And I believe I can say that the governor supports all aspects of this bill with the exception of these particular parts. And so, from our standpoint, we are taking a hard look at those particular clauses as to whether or not they are appropriate for a Gretzky-like company.
And then I'll just point you to one other clause that was the one that caught my eye. But the other is above on line 4. It says including direct ownership of a fuel supply production. So now I'm wondering if Gretzky is going to be a oil and gas producer.
My sense is it's not intended for that. It's intended to be a generation and transmission company that seeks to develop reliable long-run fuel supplies. And the exact boundary there, I think the administration wants to look at and to discuss that with the utilities.
Okay. So for this time being, the governor, this is the one, section 4250170, the fuel supplies. We can say that the governor is not supportive of, at this point in time, with the language in the CS?
That's correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Fair enough. Is there any questions from the members while I'm here? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Strandberg.
Yes, ma'am. So, knowing that the time of the day, I'm going to move through these slides because I believe it would be helpful to have Mr. Bjorkqvist just give a high overview section by section.
Okay.
This next slide is the takeaway slide. It is, we attempted to give you the goods on one slide. These are the major differences between this year's statute and last year's statute. Gretzky now is a voluntary organization. It has a number of degrees of flexibility, both to allow Gretzky to emerge economically as a major or the major generation and transmission provider in the rail belt. But there is also abilities for individual utilities to pursue projects outside of GRETSI, but also be members, public utility members of GRETSI. Now, it's well to note that there is agreement that GRETSI would provide, would be the primary conduit of state funds into the rail belt. So this will likely be a channeling channeling influence on the way GRETSI actually flows, because if the state and you, the legislators, desire to channel funds through GRETSI, a utility that wants to develop a project outside would need to go for its own financing. And presumably there would be some benefits for state financial backing. If I hope I made myself clear there, but
you did.
Okay, so last year we had language to evolve the rail belt to restructure it so that GRETSI would serve ultimately as one, at least one of the major all requirements providers of wholesale power in the rail belt. Now that would work well were we to develop a major energy project, whether it's a gas-fired plant, a coal plant, or a renewable energy project such as Chacachamna or Susitna. That is, we have not included those sorts of destination type language in the statute, and it is really built now to be it's built to be a flexible company that allows utilities to develop projects and solve problems in a number of different ways. And while the agency and the administration remains committed to evolving the rail belt in a way that provides maximum benefit for the ratepayers, which are defined in the REGA study and discussed in the RIRP, I think we recognize that this is an important first step. And it's likely that we will have to evolve over a period of time to achieve those benefits of the ratepayers. The other point, I think, is that in a number of different areas in the lower 48 where restructuring has occurred, the history shows that they have been done in a multi-step fashion. And this really, we look at it as a first cooperative step with the utilities to move towards a more tightly integrated network over the long run.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
As we get towards the end of the bill, you have Section 7 has been totally repealed. And that was the section from my original bill that had the Department of Laws, Regulatory Affairs, and Public Advocacy section, the RAPA section, and that was on the rate-making process. And so the RAPA's responsibilities were to determine and advocate for the general public interest with a particular attention and interest to the consumers for consumer protection. Has that been replaced with the RCA oversight and the five-year sunset? Was that the thinking of removing the RAPA and then inserting the RCA regulation?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
And Mr. Strandberg, is there a reason why we wouldn't have both those guarantees for consumer protection in the legislation? Is it so much duplication that we wouldn't need them both, or is there an advantage to having both RAPA and RCA have some consumer protections in place for constituents?
Another insightful question, if I may comment. In fact, the participation of RAPA is a part of RCA economic rate regulation. RAPA represents the public interest, and once this company is placed under RCA jurisdiction, the RCA will have jurisdiction over rates. It is likely that there could be rate proceedings, and RAPA would have the opportunity as a party with standing to petition to intervene in any RCA process. So they're in there. they are a part of the RCA rate regulation process.
So I guess I'll go back to our original question. Is there a reason why we don't have, why we're repealing it? I guess, you know, when I, just to be fair, both Representative Edgman and I spoke with the governor yesterday about this bill, and one of his concerns was consumer protection, and one of my biggest concerns is consumer protection. So I guess I don't understand why we wouldn't just keep both those oversights in, because they kind of do serve a different purpose as far as consumer protection goes. So my question to you is, it's an appropriate way for a consumer to go right through the RAPA process rather than the RCA process. So can you explain to me why the advantage of only having RCA? I guess I'm not clear.
First of all, I guess I need to get a better understanding, the repeal of Section 7. My understanding is that we had the bill from last year,
yep,
basically, and we're looking at the committee substitute. And as far as I know, the committee substitute has nothing in it concerning RAPA. And the bill last year had nothing in it concerning RAPA. Is there another bill that you're looking at that I don't know about?
I believe the last bill that we had, Section 7 was the RAPA. It was AS4205431 was the RAPA section of the legislation. And that, in this CS that the utilities put together, it was repealed.
I'm not sure. Do you have the last bill?
I do not.
As far as I know, and subject to check, the bill from last year did not have a section involving RAPA as a separate entity. I think last year's bill was a two-phase process where there was a recommendation that the company, after it was formed, undertake a regulatory review and to come up with a regulatory approach. We moved away from that, and this bill is a one-step process to create a company. And rather than to do that study of the regulatory piece, in the discussions with the utilities, there was agreement between the governor's office and the utilities to take full economic regulation, which is considerably beyond any, you know, approach with RAPA, just to have a simple, sure regulatory approach that the company would begin work process with.
I'll get a copy of the last book, because I don't have mine here. I just have some notes that I had made. I believe what Section 7 was a Department of Law, the Attorney General's oversight section that was in the last bill.
And Madam Co-Chair, I think there may have been interim versions of bills that were under consideration in negotiation, and I know there was one with RAP in it, but mm-hmm. That one is
okay.
Is no longer a part of this process.
Okay.
As
correct. Okay.
Madam Chair, I have one question.
President Tuck.
Thank you, Madam. You mentioned earlier, somewhere on the slide, that utilities can go ahead and go after their own projects. Will there be any time that Gretzky and a utility can potentially be in competition with each other on trying to get a project developed? Or is that scenario out of the question?
It is certainly possible, but I believe it would be unlikely the way the company is structured, and the fact that the public utility members have board representation, and so they have, you know, significant voting rights on the actions that Gretzky takes. I would expect that there may be circumstances, unique circumstances, because of the rather complex situation that we have with this Lilliputian arrangement of contracts between utilities and gas suppliers, that you could have something like that happening. But I believe it would be at a cooperative level, Representative Tuck, through the chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam. What about in the example where we have someone like Doyon Utilities, who has a huge consumer group, being the military bases, and who happens to be a member but not a voting member? would there be a potential for competition for fuel supplies, or, because in this case, we know that Gretzky allows for consolidation and being able to make major purchases with procure fuel supplies, and or any other type of power generation sources?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, very good question again. And it's a relatively complex regulatory environment that we live in. The RCA does not have jurisdiction over federal establishments, and Doyon provides services on the federal establishments by a contract that it holds with the federal government. There has, and that has existed actually for a while. MLMP had a number of relationships with, I believe it was the Air Force, where they sold power, and the RCA allowed them to sell power at a defined demarcation point. And so under the current regulatory environment, there can be flows of power from regulated utilities onto the bases. And in essence, as Gretzky forms, it's likely that that environment, you know, hopefully would exist, and we would, Gretzky will evolve gradually. So the answer is, certainly there could be competitive situations that develop. But I believe they would be relatively unlikely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chairman, can you point me to the section of the CS that talks about, as it stands now, what I understand how generation utilities sell their power is on a residential level, commercial level, and industrial level. Does the new generation in the Gretzky Corporation, is there an industrial rate or a commercial rate, or is it all just postage stamp rates, so industries and commercial rates would pay the same as the residential rates? Is there any give to big consumers, you know, anchor tenants of electrical power in this bill?
Certainly. And
can you find that particular place in the bill for the sale to industrial customers?
I would generally say, okay, thank you. On page 10, as a power, Gretzky may, let's go back to general power of the corporation, page 10, generate, manufacture, purchase, acquire, accumulate, transmit, meter, and dispatch retail electric power and ancillary services to an industrial customer and sell at retail, supply, and dispose of electric power to an industrial customer. Now, there are some hooks on that, and this was a subject of significant discussion in the task force meetings. Generally speaking, Gretzky is configured to have the ability to serve a large load, but there is a requirement to consult with the utility, the public utility, whose service area is near or encompasses that that potential large load, and have first right of refusal to serve that load at their own retail tariff.
So that would be the residential rate?
Well, it would be their industrial tariff, and any other regulated utilities have a number of different tariffs. Indeed, there's an ability within the RCA statute for a utility to negotiate a wholesale power rate for an industrial customer that, because of the character of service, could be considerably different from the standard residential rate. And that those are regularly done. There's a number of major power sales contracts that are in effect right now serving mines. Pogo Mine. So, I mean, within the regulatory environment, there are processes, and I think what Gretzky seeks to do is to give Gretzky the power to serve, but it must afford the regulated utility first right of refusal before it goes and serves.
Okay.
Are we
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay.
Continue, sorry. We just have I just have a ton of questions, sorry.
Yes, and they're very good questions. Certainly happy to answer them to the best of my ability. So the external controls, and this relates to the regulation. I've always looked at necessary areas of oversight for a public purpose corporation such as Gretzky to include consumer protection. There needs to be financial oversight to make sure the company is running itself financially correctly. And then, of course, the effectiveness of the corporation. How well is it actually discharging its duties? And this is particularly important with character with Gretzky because it is really designed to be a public purpose corporation. And because there is a chance that were you, the legislature, to agree to pour capital in some fashion into the company to respond to that capital gap we talked about earlier, there's particular need to have financial oversight of this company. And in particular, it's largely a wholesale power company. It'll have relationships with utilities, but it really won't have any relationship with any retail customers anywhere in the railroad, except with that point that you brought up, Madam Co-Chair, with large industrial loads. So the protections in response to that, this new company would be subject to the economic rate regulation by the RCA for a five-year period. And if the legislature takes no action after 5 years, the jurisdiction, the RCA would no longer have rate regulation jurisdiction. And the thought is that these critical first 5 years are going to be, there is going to be a lot of oversight necessary as the company forms itself. This is where the some very heavy work has to be done to get this company up and running. In addition, because of the concerns about financial oversight and the effectiveness of the corporation, there's really yet another layer, if you will, of oversight above and beyond the RCA. And there's an inclusion of a management audit that the company must subject itself to a full top-to-bottom management audit every 3 years for the first 10 years. Now, the management audit in the statute is defined by a standard that was developed by NARUC, which is the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. It is a prominent regulatory organization, and I believe the chief counsel of Shugach had brought some copies of at least the initial parts of this manual. It's well respected, it's been well used. So that in a nutshell are the protections. There is an expectation that we're going to gather more information on how good the company is, and there may need to be further actions taken later on. But this basically covers the first 5 and 10 years of the corporation's life.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Strandberg. Is there any questions for Mr. Strandberg before we move on to the attorney portion of our Representative Tuck?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just checking to see, so after that 5 year, then after the 10 year, then it'd be an unregulated corporation, but we will have co-ops involved with that, hoping to protect the consumers, and standards would be set from there on out that they would be able to self-regulate themselves.
Through the chair, the corporation, even without the RCA jurisdiction, has a number of protections. Number one, it has a requirement that all of its processes be public. There is a detailed dispute resolution process within the company. There is the ability of a member or a public utility member to appeal any of the rates that Gretzky makes. There is also the ability of consumers to come to board meetings and to protest. So there is significant public processes built into the basic structure of the company. You know, the goal is to build this, put it on autopilot, and expect it to work right. But we have built-in oversights, and we've built-in requirements for public processes that the company must undertake in its day-to-day businesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members?
I have some questions.
Representative Johansson.
I missed the first part. So is Mr. Strandberg leaving, and we're having somebody else come up?
We are. We're going to have the Department of Law come and explain the CS to us, the sections of the changes in the CS.
Okay. Then I better get these out of the way, because they're probably not for the Department of Law. First of all, you talked about, and I missed this too, and I apologize, but the capital infusion that is either required or expected from the state for this company, Gretzky, whatever you call it. So we're basically going to fill up a pot full of money, and whoever's part of the group is going to decide through the IRP to where it goes. Is that how it works?
That's the underlying structure of a process, but there's a bit more to it. Through the chair, Representative Johansson, there's a bit more to it than that. There's the integrated resource plan that the state has produced basically is going to be provided to Gretzky for its consideration and use. Which projects get funded and the loan conditions or grant conditions that attach themselves to those funding levels will need to be developed. And there will need to be ways to protect the public interest in any capital infusions or the types of capital infusions, whether they're loans, underwriting, all of that is yet to be developed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
I'm going to need to understand how that works, because if I push a button to support, let's just say, $1 billion, which may or may not be the number, to pour into this pot, once it's out of my hands, it sounds like the corporation or group gets it and has an internal process to decide where the money goes. And I'm a little concerned about the control of the appropriation. From my perspective, it'd make it much more difficult. So I just need to understand that more. We don't have to do it here, but I want to let you understand there are questions out there. If I may continue, Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
And when we were on powers of the corporation, page 10, I guess the easy one is line 26. Owning and operating facilities to find and extract fuel deposits. What does that mean?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, another good question. That I have tagged as a part of the fuel supply issue that the administration needs to deal with. It may well go away.
Follow up.
And just for the members, own notice, we won't be adopting the CS based on some of the provisions that the administration still is uncomfortable with. We did adopt it, and Representative Reimer should object to it, but I'll be removing my motion to adopt the CS because of some of the things that the administration is uncomfortable with, and one of them is the mining and the lease and the oil and gas leases within the provisions of the new CS. So
okay, I missed all that, so
yes,
I
sorry that. I should have said it again.
I should have been on time.
Yes.
It's my own fault.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. So, and I did hear the comment from Mr. Strandberg about 425170 is in question by the governor, which is fine. So am I led to believe that all of the associated tangents that I can find in here that have to do with the same concept are much like page 10, line 26, are under question?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Madam Chair, one more question, if I may.
Representative Johansson.
And page 12, line 5 and 6. It doesn't cause me that much concern, since you're questioning the, basically going out and looking for oil and gas on your own, conducts its business and exercises its powers inside or outside the state. So basically, anything that we okay here, if this passed right now as is and was signed by the governor, theoretically, Gretzky could go outside of the state and look for oil and gas, maybe go to Texas and Qatar and be kind of a, you could be one of the little explorers that are scrapping away to make a living on the North Slope these days. Or you could just pull stakes and go down to Pennsylvania and do some fracking.
Through the chair. You know,
he's got shale in his mind.
Yeah,
you may.
I don't believe so. That the service area defined for the operations of the company are this is defined in the statute, and it's basically the service areas of the public utilities. On a Suantai project, I got a bill for somebody traveling to Mexico, and I said, what the heck's going on here? And what it was the company purchased a transformer in Mexico, and in order to buy the transformer, the SEPA had to send somebody down to Mexico to witness the test. I believe that's the reason for this, is that you're going to buy stuff from the outside, and you're going to have to do business inside and outside of the state for the benefit of the ratepayers.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
I guess I understand that conducting its business, obviously you have to have transactions and do other things, but exercising its powers, and there's 27 powers listed here, and one of them is to own and operate facilities to find and extract fuel deposits. So. Something else that's on my mind, we don't need to talk about it on and on, but I guess if I just may make one more comment.
Representative Johansson.
I guess maybe under sponsor we should have House Rules Committee by request of the governor by request, because it doesn't seem like the governor is completely behind all of the sections in this bill. So it's more of a product of the Gretzky folks, and maybe the governor's introducing it just to see kind of what happened, but it's got his name on it, so. And I know we can't introduce it by request, but it just seems like it's not something that he knitted himself. Just a comment. I don't need any.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have one other question that as I was going through the two bills, and now I do have the other bill in front of me. So there was in the original bills, there was a review process for the general public to examine Gretzky's books and records. And it seems to me that looking at the new CS, that's something that has been left out. And can you tell me why the openness and transparency for the general public is not in the new CS? And I believe we're talking about Section 6 of the original bill, which would be 4250-210.
Madam Co-Chair, if we could go to page 18, Section 4250-210. We've moved some things around.
I'm sorry, what page?
Page 18.
Page 18?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And on line 10, basically the discussions with the task force were to allow members, people who take services from, or companies that take services from Gretzky, or the ratepayers of the region would have access to books and records. I think there was a general feeling that that group of people needed to have ready access to all of the books and records. And at the present time, there is no mechanism for the public at large to gain access to books and records.
So there's no provision currently in the CS for the general public to examine the corporations?
That's correct.
And can you tell me why? Is there, you can see it could set up a little bit of a fear that we're cooking the books and not having any opportunity for the general public to take a look and interpret them.
Yes, I understand that. And the discussions with the utilities, this is the approach that that came out of that process. I would comment that there are significant audit processes and that are public and that are published and delivered both to the legislature and to put on the web pages. The examination of the books and records, the innards, if you will, of the company, though, the way this is written right now is it's only accessible to members and the ratepayers. And that's the situation. It is the standard for the co-op industry.
Okay. And then, Mr. Sternberg, I have one other question before you leave the table. Prior to this legislation passing, has there been an examination by Department of Revenue before we join up with a corporation and extend a line of credit, bonding capacity, general funds, to look at those corporations' health, of their financial health, so we know that that all the corporations are healthy fiscally before we decide to go in and start funding these corporations? Have we looked at the six utilities books to find out where they are financially, each one of them?
I'll tell you what we have done at the Energy Authority. We, under the Integrated Resource Plan, we, as a part of the team, had Seattle Northwest, which is a financial advisor firm, and they are on a term contract with our agency. We asked them to look at the public records of all six of the utilities and to determine their borrowing power. I think basically there was no question about that all six were basic going concerns. We were primarily focused to determine whether or not just how much they could borrow. And we did that totally off of public records, but we've not done any audits, and the administration has not gone any further than that in the process of developing this statute.
Mr. Sternberg, is there any way that we could ask for a audit of the companies before we go forward, so we know as a state that the companies that were going to be financing. I'd like to look at their balance sheets and make sure that their borrowing capacity is what it's currently at, and what their debt is, frankly, to tell you the truth. I guess what I'm concerned about, what my consumers are concerned about, is that this is a way to maybe save some of the utilities that are not as financially healthy as one would want them to be. And by forming this corporation, we're throwing them a lifeline, when in all honesty, maybe we shouldn't be throwing those financial institutions that aren't financially healthy a lifeline and let them fail on their own and then move on and form a corporation that we have some confidence in.
Madam Co-Chair, we can certainly provide you the work papers that we did when we developed this, the Seattle Northwest work. I would comment that the new corporation, I understand your concern. The new corporation will have a board of directors of 13 people. And if you look at the potential for voting blocks, if there is one utility that may be in difficulties and may be attempting to get bailed out, if you will, by the new company, and I've thought about that. The properly functioning Gretzky board, which really has a goal of least cost power for each of the utilities, I think it would be unlikely that that process could get ran through a properly functioning Gretzky board. And Gretzky's relationship with the other utilities will be primarily through contract. I guess I'm going to have to think a little bit more about that, but my initial thought is that first we'll provide you with all the information that we've had, if that's what you would like.
I think so, Mr. Schoenberg.
We can respond to that.
I would just like to have either the Department of Law or the Department of Revenue or our audit take a look at the financial health of all the corporations before we decide that we're going to be the bank in some form for this corporation. I mean, if we're giving them grants of general funds, if we're bonding, if we're going into debt as a state for the benefit of consumers, I'd like to know that, first off, we're partnering with some folks that have a track record of making good, sound financial decisions. If their corporations are in dire straits, my confidence of the board of those members that are in financial hardships isn't too high. So if I've got three corporations that are financially doing poorly, why would I want six members from those utilities making decisions on investments when they've done so poorly previously? So that's my concern. And I'm not saying that that's going on, but those are some of the concerns that have been parlayed to me about some of the utilities. And whether it's true or not, I think that instead of talking about it, maybe we could just take a financial health inventory of all six utilities, so the members around this table can understand who we're partnering with before we pass a piece of legislation like this.
I understand your request. We will respond.
Okay. Is there any other questions before we, Representative Johansson?
Thank you. We had Health Day across the street in the, what affectionately called the SLOB now, the Stewart Legislative Office Building. And it goes right along with that question, the health of these entities that may be part of this deal. And it goes back to my original concern about the state writing a great big fat check and dropping it in the laps of groups that are, we really don't know what their financial situation is. At least I don't. Somebody might. You guys might. But I don't. And that causes me a little bit of concern. So I would like to be more comfortable with how the different groups are situated. I mean, they're all led by sophisticated, very experienced people in this industry. Very rarely have I ever come across anybody in the utility industry who hasn't been doing it for 20, 25 years. So everybody knows each other, and they're very familiar with all of these projects. And I'm not, because I'm from British Columbia, as half the people like to say. But it does cause me concern, and I think the chair hit it on the head. At some point, you're going to ask us to write a big, fat check. And I want to know who's going to be in charge of it and what the positions of all of those groups are. Thank you.
Can you, Representative Ramirez?
No, I got a haircut.
Oh, it looks nice. Okay. Any other questions from the members? Mr. Schoenberg, we're 20 minutes past our committee time, but we just had a quick chat, side chat, and we do have bills previously heard on Tuesday, and I think it would be the will of the committee to come back and continue this fascinating conversation.
Absolutely.
About utilities on Tuesday, if that will work for the committee members. I think that's what we'll do, and this is a good time. You've given us a lot of information and a lot to think about, and I think we can go back and formulate our questions, and we can get to the attorney section of our bill, and I think we'll have a lot more questions, and there might be formed a little better as we digest this over the weekend. Does any other members have any questions before we gavel out? And with that, Mrs. Schoenberg, I'll send it to you.